Welcome to CompTIA's Shark Bites podcast with Alan Shark, Executive Director at the Public Technology Institute.
Hey, this is Alan Shark. As you know, I'm the Executive Director of CompTIA's Public Technology Institute, and we are very proud to be offering one of CompTIA's newest podcast series called Shark Bites. Our focus has been on local and sometimes state government technology, with a focus in particular on leadership. We kind of look at some of the key issues that our folks are facing across the country. And today we're very lucky to have someone I've known for many years. Her name is Rosetta Liu. She is somebody who's one of the great experts when it comes to citizen communications and the citizen experience, which we'll get to. I first met her when she was heading the Philadelphia's 311 project and system, which was a model for the United States. She went on to become a White House Presidential Executive Fellow and Senior Contact Center Advisor to the Department of Veterans Administration, let alone the City of Philadelphia's first Chief Customer Experience Manager, a very cool title. She was also appointed Deputy Managing Director, who oversaw the design and daily operations of the nationally recognized City of Philadelphia 311 program, which was rather comprehensive. I think it kind of began with a call center and it morphed into an app and to a lot of other citizen-facing communications. So you've had an incredible career. Rosetta, first of all, welcome to Shark Bites.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Alan.
So let's start when we first met in Philadelphia. What attracted, what drew you to this? This was kind of cutting edge stuff at the time. This goes back a number of years. What attracted you to it, and what were you most proud of, and what did you learn through the Philadelphia experience?
Yeah, no, and you're right, where it was very innovative. But at the time, this was back in 2008, and the mayor had just gotten elected, Mayor Michael Nutter, and his agenda and one of his platform as part of his election and campaign was to have an operation that centralized, where you didn't have to know anyone that knows someone to get something done. So at the time, I was down in Florida, enjoying myself and doing a lot of customer experience and service work down here. And I got a call from Jeff Friedman, who today is still one of the rock stars in this industry. And he said, hey, we have a great opportunity. We have 6 months left to get this done. And we would like for you to come and join us because we need someone who has experience and can get this call center up and running. So understanding what the background was, starting a contact center was something I was very familiar with, but moving from the private sector back into government was the exciting venture, and doing something totally new was fascinating to me. So I ended up moving to Philadelphia and working with a team that actually, when I got there, I thought they were much further along because they had 6 months left to go, but they actually had just really gotten started. I mean, it was no call center.
Welcome to local government. You got to look under the hood.
Yes,
so go ahead. Yes.
Yes. But I've learned since then, it's like switching bait. It's not intentional sometimes, but it happens. You really need to look under the hood. I mean, literally the contact center was down in a basement with nothing already set up. But within that 6 months, like I said, working with a small team of folks, that's one of the things that I like to do, is work with small groups of people, and we all bring something to the table. We were able to launch that contact center within 6 months. And we're talking about the facilities, the technology configuration, hiring the people, the training, just having everything done with that time period, because the date was not going to change. And we launched that on December 31st, 2008. And over time, it's just one of the most, it's like a little baby, you know, it was one of the most things that I'm proud of in my career. Because at the time in 2008, we had that recession going on, things were changing. We weren't even supposed to go live because of the tight budgets that were happening. But we took that contact center and just over time using data, going out, talking to the people, getting people involved through our community practices, we ended up being a finalist for the United Nations Award in Public Innovation. And that's taking it from nothing to actually something. So it's something that we're proud of, and I'm so happy that I did that work.
So, you know, for those not familiar, I think it might be helpful to explain the concept of 311 and how it's morphed from just something that you call. But this came back to the 70s when the FCC designated a whole number of channels, you know, 611, 311, 511. But 311 was the non-emergency number designated for local governments who so chose. And you had to go beyond just that. I mean, it requires some technology adaption in terms of switching over so that when somebody calls a 311, it goes to the right center. But think about prior to this, as you said, calling people you might know. But let's go step back. The only way people would get to government was perhaps the old yellow pages or the blue pages that had listings and phone numbers. And now you had a centralized way to get to somebody who could serve as some people refer to as the concierge of the local government, that would direct that inquiry, whatever it is that's non-emergency, and then hopefully log it and get some answers. Did I leave anything out? Is that a good description, would you say?
Yeah, that's a really good description. And in fact, the whole goal coming out of this is really to give the customers, the residents, businesses, visitors, whomever, really one. You remember two numbers when you're within that city. It's 911 for emergency, 311 for everything else. And what it does is really the hub of the operations, where they don't, if they need help on a permit or they want to report a street light out, a pothole, or any other non-emergency incidents or inquiries, because a lot of these centers, 80% of their calls is just general information about the city and city services, that they don't have to remember 500 different numbers to call. And so it started out, to your point, it started, you know, where this number exchange was given to from, you know, from the FCC to Baltimore. The city of Baltimore was really the first ones that started this. And they started it out of the need of having to separate those calls with, you have officers being disabled or down. They wanted to give those officers something to do that was relevant to their position. So they came up with the idea, hey, all these folks are calling 911 for non-emergencies, and it's really tying up the line. How about we have, you know, folks on the other side of the wall start taking these calls? And what they saw, based on the non-emergencies coming in, they saw a lot of issues that were going on in the community that could be easily solved without having to use the emergency operation system. And then it went through from there.
So now we have a completed loop. And I know when 311 first came about, it was a very novel kind of concept for all the reasons we both discussed. But then something happened, like a second generation. I'd be interested to see where you think we are now. I mean, there's been a couple of waves of innovation. But all this data that's now being collected, it's one thing to direct people as an operator who blindly takes the call, says, thank you. So now you have a great interface. They go to the appropriate department and try and get action. And then I think a second wave was when they started documenting that in a more orderly way. And so they could track it. So if somebody called a second time, there would be a customer or citizen records management system that now suddenly would be the heart of things, that they could look and see, oh, yes, you called 3 weeks ago and you called again. And they now had a way of tracking. There seemed to be another wave that suddenly people said, wait a minute, we have data. We have data that gives us a heartbeat of things that we could use to improve things. Is that where we are today, or we've even evolved beyond that?
We're evolving beyond that. As you know, data now has surpassed oil as the top currency. What data does is really gives you an idea as to trends that are happening within the city or within that state or local government. Like, what are the people reporting? You know, so it's moved away from, this is what I think, to now you have data that can actually be used as evidence for moving forward. With that data now, we're able to develop profiles and understanding as to what the needs are for whomever is calling into the city, regardless of what they're calling for. And like you said, Alan, someone may have reported, a streetlight being out or Miss Trash or a pothole. Yes, the person might call back and they said, hey, this hasn't been fixed. It has now morphed to, they don't even need to call back. You're using systems that are giving them status update as to what's going on. And here is the fun thing about it now, right? To the next element you're saying, someone else may be calling in. Can you, about that same issue. Can you imagine you called in and the city or your government saying, yes, we're aware of this and here's what's happening on it. So now you don't even need to call. You can actually go in and some of these systems just put the address in and it's on the web. It can tell you it has been reported and here is how long this takes. And now you're providing information to folks and you're connecting to them and it shows the city's on top of what's going on and that their information that they're giving is of value. And so rather than just sit there and not do anything or say, well, the city's not going to do anything or government's not going to do anything, these are now becoming performance issues where.
Yeah, so now you're getting KPIs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's another piece of this evolution that we haven't gotten to yet, and that is the rise of apps. Because it's one thing to be web-centric, which I wholly endorse. I don't think that's going away and nor should it. That's kind of the main storefront. That is the solid place that you direct people to. But we know that everyone's walking around with mobile devices, whether it be a phone, a tablet, and many have done some incredible metrics to kind of divide the pie in terms of showing where these inquiries are coming from among customers / citizens, residents. And I know there are political sensitivities to each of those categories, but you also created MyPhilly, which is one of the first major apps to be instituted that I thought was amazingly successful.
Yes, yes. One of the things, and you're right, in terms of mobile app and smartphones being a channel to communicate with government. One of the things we saw in Philadelphia is we couldn't make any assumption that everyone had internet at the house, right? Because there is a digital divide across this country. Not everyone has broadband, not everyone has access to the internet. But guess what everyone has? A smartphone.
Yeah.
So how do you communicate rather than saying you must do this, right? You put the controls back into the customer's hands. So whatever channel they want to use, whether it's calling, emailing, social media, on the phone, using their smart apps, we started migrating towards those channels so we could develop a broader reach into the community and to help begin to develop trust that if you report something, something's going to get resolved. So with these smart apps in Philadelphia, what we were able to do, it started out, we weren't the first ones with a mobile application. But I think what separated us from the rest of them is that we were the first ones to have like 17 different translatable languages with that mobile application platform. So it didn't matter what language you spoke, if English was not your first language, we were able to identify what were the top languages in Philadelphia. And it shouldn't stop you from reporting issues in your community to government in order for them to resolve it. So that along with the data and communicating back into languages that they understood, I mean, it really helped solidify us as innovative operations within the 311 industry. And the mobile app had a lot to do with that. You could see statuses on there. We developed a whole community engagement program around the mobile app in which if you're walking, take a picture. We made things so seamless and easy for you. Take the picture, submit the application, submit the issue, the challenge that is out there, and then you would get information back on the app, on the status and what's going on, whether it's resolved. So we were able to take that mobile app and really use it in a way that folks didn't have to call in. And it was available 24/7. So even if we were not available within the operations because we were closed, you could still do business with the city 24 hours a day.
Very exciting. In fact, flattery is sometimes copying something that you find great. And as you know, I was so impressed with what you did. I had an opportunity while wearing my Rutgers professor hat to do one exactly like yours for the city of Newark. It was called My Newark, and it was totally same platform as what you had. It inspired many throughout the United States. So you've left Philadelphia, although you say that it's still something that you feel emotionally attached to. I get that. You went to the Veterans Administration, where you had a stint there as a White House fellow and doing some incredible things in similar factions. Now you basically are a principal of your own company, GovCXP. And we have a relationship, I should mention, with PTI CompTIA, where hopefully you'll be offering some really cool services. But everywhere we look, we see this thing called CX. Mm-hmm. And some people think that's still a railroad, CSX. But no, we're talking about CX, which stands for customer experience. It's almost like it's exploded both in the private sector and the government sector. What's causing that? And what makes CX, I assume that's more comprehensive, far beyond 311. So what's your involvement with all of this?
Yeah, in fact, for government experienced professionals, that's GovCXP, what we find in government is there are a lot of standards that we can take from the private sector, but there is something unique about government. Sometimes we have legislations, we have regulations, we have rules we need to follow. So the idea of bringing that same concept, like Disney, Amazon, they have really began to understand and brand their organizations with their customers to have that loyalty, that when you talk about them, you have a smile on your face. They're good at what they do. That's all falling under that customer experience. And what customer experience is, it's not customer service. The customer experience, to think of it, is from cradle to grave. How was your experience with that organization when you interacted with them? How did it make you feel once you left, your issues got resolved or it didn't get resolved, right? So we're looking at the experience from cradle to grave across the board. So it's not just, did you call the contact center and you got your information? It is, no, from the very beginning, how was your relationship with the organization? Is there anything we can do better? We're trying to have an emotional connection with that customer to personalize your service and really trying to get to know them. So it started off, the customer experience management philosophy started out in the private sector, but now over the past few years has moved into government as well, because government has a lot of services that they provide. And even though many times you can't deal with another organization, a private sector, you have to deal with government, you want to have these communities where they feel connected and that they can trust that their government will get things done. So you're seeing that whole school of thought now coming into the government, the public sector, as much as it did in the private sector. The good thing about this is there are great opportunities within government to improve the experience.
It can only go up, right?
yeah, it can only go up. And that's the thing, right? We want to be, as mayors managing city managers within cities or at the higher levels in state government, you want to attract people into your community. Okay, it's like, why should I pick this community versus another, right? Because from a government standpoint, those are taxes. That's money coming into the city. There's a vested interest that they want to, at least to your point, like, hey, why is it taking so long, right? It's like, you want to make sure that you're giving those people some type of interaction that they're like, this is not bad. I'm gonna come visit, Philadelphia or Tampa more often, and it's, can I do business with you very easily? If something is wrong, can I connect to you? Are you open to feedback? Do you do anything with the feedback? So part of that philosophy in customer experience management is to understand your customers through the journeys that they have to go through when they interact with you, as well as to begin to build profiles of your typical customers. And I say the biggest thing that I've learned and that I'm attracted to in this field is the fact that you solve problems around the user, Okay, we don't solve problems because that's the way Alan feels or Rosetta feels, right? Apple was very good at this, right? Who knew that you needed an iPhone, you know, or you needed
wireless earbuds that are really ugly. You know, it's still not used to those little AirPods that stick out of people's ears that are white, that are screaming for attention. It's like, those are ugly, but boy, I see more and more people. That's like a status thing now.
Yes, yes. And it's all based off of listening to your customers, not even if they do business with you, but going out on social media, pulling analytics, pulling data. What are people complaining about? What, when they talk to you and your design, you're telling them here's the issue that you tell me is the problem. How can we design this to be better for you?
So let me play devil's advocate here. I'm a city or county manager. I hear this happy talk. You know, I've got them over a barrel. They have to pay taxes. They have to get permits. I have a captive audience and I'll do the best I can, but to do what you're suggesting and advocating to make citizens' experiences better, I mean, that's going to take some money and change of attitude. I mean, it's not just technology. It's changing the attitude of many people in my government. What's in it for me? What are the rewards that I could expect? Because this is a big cultural change from what we're doing now.
Yeah, and you hear that. I mean, I hear that as well. You know, it's like, why should I change what I'm doing now? It works. But it's not working for your customers. I'll tell you one situation that I had recently was I was just trying to get a permit to do business, you know, in the city. Mm-hmm. And it took me 3 hours. And that's not, I tried going online. And that's where you see a lot of folks now are trying to business online. They're getting used to that. They can do it very easily with Amazon, very easily with other organizations. But when it comes to government, it's like, you give up, right? So you're starting with customers who are frustrated, you know, because that's not an option for them. So I started there online and then it's like, forget it. I'm going to have to go downtown. Go downtown, 3 hours later, all I had was a certificate saying that, hey, you're registered in our system. Why did it take 3 hours to do that? And so the processes needs to be looked at because a lot of those processes can be automated. So when we're saying things like it's going to cost more money, I didn't have to register. You know, I could have walked away and said, it's too hard. Can you imagine how many people are walking away and the revenues you're losing because they just go ahead and they want to open up a hair salon? They just do it in the basement, you know, until somebody reports them, you know, as illegal. But to get that registration done in your system takes forever and is very cumbersome. So there's a lot of lost revenues happening because we make it so hard for people to do business with us.
Yes, and we could be more efficient. And if you have a good feedback loop, you're learning from what people are complaining. So right. Making them happy means listening, and innovation is all about doing things differently.
Exactly.
And so one last question, because we're running out of time. This has been fascinating. You've been very helpful in navigating us through a journey from a city to a concept of providing really good administrative services to understanding, the best definition I've heard yet, about the customer experience, kind of being on top of that and being equally important. What got you into this business in the first place? I mean, did you wake up one morning and say, I'm going to be a technologist or I'm going to be a process engineer? I mean, what right. was it that got you to where you were? Is there one significant thing in your education, in your background, or was it kind of a lot of luck and things falling into place?
Yeah, I'm originally from the Caribbean. And so within the Caribbean, where I'm from, St. Croix, like 89% of our gross revenues come from tourism. You know, and that's the way it is across many of these cultures, you know, in West Indies, or you're heavily relying on tourism. So we were used to, you know, understanding that you get an angry customer, they're not coming back, right? So you've learned that. I got into this business, graduating with a degree in finance and accounting, and I was working at USAA. And I was just doing my regular thing, just moving forward. And then a supervisor, and this is what they say, you never know who's going to change your life. For whatever reason, I wasn't out there politicking, and I didn't know. She just came up to me and she said, I think you would be great in this new concept of call centers that we're building for USAA. And she opened up a can of worms. And this is the place that I love doing this. And working for USAA for 10 years, you couldn't ask for a better organization.
Their reputation, talk about customer experience. Oh, their reputation is legendary. Their advertisements are from customers.
It's 75 years. Those, I mean, dealt with generals. There's a reason why their membership is so strong and their loyalty to that organization is so strong. And it's not because they're the cheapest. They're not by any means the lowest cost in the industry at all. They're competitive. But the fact, the way they treat you as a customer, the way they treat their employees, it's amazing. And you have people that are working there and happy to work there, you know, and it's all because of that ability to connect to the employees and to the customers based off of those relations.
So that's the other piece of this conversation about customer experience in government. Mm-hmm. Not only do we want to make the citizens, residents happy, which is a good goal, but it's also going to make the employees of that government more happy and productive.
Exactly.
And then they're going to feel better about what they do and probably more open to the fact, hey, we could do this better or differently, so that innovation can really take hold as you complete this thing. Rosetta, we could talk for hours and maybe we should have you back, but I want to thank you. This has been very enlightening. I think for many people, they will have learned about 311 that they may not have known, that this is more than just something that has three letters. It is something you see on most websites across the country. You have been a national leader. You continue to be a national leader in this, and we are so happy to have had you today. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, before I leave, Alan, let me just give, if I could say one more thing, wrap
sure.
it up. Now we're in a crisis, a pandemic with this COVID-19. We were just talking about why should government change, right? I think this pandemic and this crisis is going to change the way we do business, whether we want to or not.
Forever.
And right yes. now, as in government, we need to be looking, doing things now, because we're moving more into a contactless environment. So my story about coming to come down and be with a bunch of folks and just for 3 hours, that's no longer acceptable. You know, you're going to have, what we're seeing is the investment is going into the digital platforms. And it's not a huge investment, but it's an investment that you have to do because of this post-COVID environment that we're moving into. So it's even more imperative now that the customer experience and looking at the digital transformation that needs to occur into a more contactless digital environment is so key to being successful today in government.
I can't think of a better way to end a conversation. Remind people, this was the first time I wanted to forget about COVID just for a moment, but I'm so glad you brought it back, because this is being recorded during a very stressful period of time for all of us. And whenever this is listened to, the issues that we're talking about today will remain as current, if not even more important. So I want to sign off by saying thank you so much. We've been talking with Rosetta Liu, who is really one of the national champions for citizen communications, CX. And I'm Alan Shark with Shark Bites, part of CompTIA's newest podcast. And for those of you who haven't considered, please subscribe, because we are on the regular beat and we are going around the United States interviewing some very cool people. Again, thank you, Rosetta. Have a great day.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Alan. Bye.
This has been a production of PTI, the Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit pti.org.